This is Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, we break down day one of the impeachment trial.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Senator Schumer said earlier today that the eyes of the founders are on these proceedings. Dean, that's true. But it is the heart of the Constitution that governs these proceedings. And what we just heard from Manager Schiff, courts have no role, privileges don't apply. What happened in the past, we should just ignore. In fact, Manager Schiff just said, try to summarize my colleague's defense of the president. He said, not in those words, of course, which is not the first time Mr. Schiff has put words into transcripts that did not exist.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Mr. Schiff also talked about a trifecta. I'll give you a trifecta. During the proceedings that took place before the Judiciary Committee, the president was denied the right to cross-examine witnesses. The president was denied the right to access evidence. And the president was denied the right to have counsel present at hearings. That's a trifecta. A trifecta that violates the Constitution of the United States.
And now your host, Than Bennett.
Welcome into Jay Sekulow Live, everyone. I'm Than Bennett, coming to you live from Washington, D.C. And you heard it in that open, folks. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow, acting in his private capacity as counsel to the president, making very forceful arguments on the floor of the United States Senate in day one of the impeachment trial. Folks, it's hard to imagine that we are here, but here we are. One day of the impeachment trial in the books, day two, just minutes ahead. As I speak to you live from Washington, D.C., we're going to do a couple of things on the broadcast today. We're going to be bringing you more sound from day one. You're going to hear a lot from our chief counsel, the host of this broadcast, again, acting in his private capacity, making arguments on behalf of the president from the floor of the United States Senate. We'll also look ahead to what's going to happen today in day two of the trial as House managers begin to present their case to the United States Senate. But folks, you heard a lot from us yesterday. We were working hard to try to prepare you, to try to set you up for what you were about to see in this trial. So we want to hear a lot from you today. How much of these proceedings did you watch yesterday? How much of them do you plan to watch going forward? Did you see anything that surprised you maybe? Or did it leave you with questions or comments about how the United States Senate is handling that? If you want to make your voice heard, if you want to join the conversation, our phone lines are open for you today at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. But let me give you a quick recap of yesterday, just so we're all up to speed. The Senate was in session from about 1 p.m. until about 2 a.m., so about a 13-hour marathon session ended just before 2 a.m., I think about 1:50 a.m., and most of the day was filled with debate on amendments to the rules. Now, as expected, the organizing resolution that was put forward by Leader McConnell, it prevailed in the end. It tracks closely with the 1999 rules that governed the Clinton proceedings. The Democrats offered 11 amendments to those rules, various amendments to offer subpoenas and other things. All 11 of them failed. The only real modification was that Leader McConnell agreed to let both sides have 3 days instead of two to present their case to the United States Senate. Now, they still only have 24 hours aside, so really this was a pretty minor change, I think a pretty reasonable change, but they can spread that out over 3 days aside if they like to. In the end, that resolution, that organizing resolution put forward by Leader McConnell, passed 53-47. It sets up motions and the presentation from the managers today. However, no pretrial motions have been filed, so it looks like we're getting right to the case. That gets you up to the minute, folks. The rules are set. It is time for the trial to begin in earnest, for the arguments to be made. It will start with the managers at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. They will have 24 hours spread over 3 days to make their case, and then the president's team will get their chance to make their case. You're going to hear more sound from our chief counsel acting in his private capacity as we go along. We'll play more of that from yesterday for you. We'll bring Professor Hutchison into the conversation. We will also take your phone calls, comments, and questions. Phone lines open for you. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Back after this break.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to J Secular Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. with you today, joined by Professor Harry Hutchison, who we'll bring into the conversation in just a moment here. But folks, in the opening segment of the broadcast, you heard some sound from someone very familiar to you. If you're a listener to the broadcast, our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, making arguments on the floor of the Senate. Really, you heard sound from essentially what was his opening statement to these amendments that were being offered to the organizing rules. There will, of course, be time for him to make a more comprehensive argument on behalf of the president later in the trial. But I wanted to go back to some of this sound just to give you a flavor of what that sounded like. Again, this was a full day of debate over the organizing resolution that sets out the rules that will govern the trial. The sound that you're going to hear is from Jay Sekulow on behalf of the president, arguing that the resolution put forward by Leader McConnell is appropriate. It's consistent with precedent on how previous impeachment trials have run. Of course, this debate took 13 hours over these rules, but here's just a little bit from Jay Sekulow arguing in defense of the resolution put forward by Leader McConnell.
It's also my privilege to represent the President of the United States before this chamber. Senator Schumer said earlier today that the eyes of the founders are on these proceedings. Indeed, that's true. But it is the heart of the Constitution that governs these proceedings. And what we just heard from Manager Schiff, courts have no role, privileges don't apply. What happened in the past, we should just ignore. In fact, Manager Schiff just said, try to summarize my colleague's defense of the president. He said, not in those words, of course, which is not the first time Mr. Schiff has put words into transcripts that did not exist. Mr. Schiff also talked about a trifecta. I'll give you a trifecta. During the proceedings that took place before the Judiciary Committee, the president was denied the right to cross-examine witnesses. The president was denied the right to access evidence. And the president was denied the right to have counsel present at hearings. That's a trifecta. A trifecta that violates the Constitution of the United States.
Folks, again, Jay Sekulow on the floor of the United States Senate yesterday arguing on behalf of the president. I'm going to bring Professor Hutchison into the conversation now, but just generally speaking, Jay is obviously a part of the president's legal team. Jordan Sekulow, our executive director, is also a part of the president's legal team. They are the hosts of this broadcast. That is why they are not with us this week. It's why you have Harry and I with you. But I'm glad they are where they are, folks, because Professor, as Jay argued in that clip that we played, this is about so much more than just President Trump. It's certainly about President Trump and the attacks that have been levied against him, but it's also about the presidency in general. It's also about preserving the principles and the tenets of the Constitution. It's also about ensuring that proper due process is afforded to everyone, including the president. Of course, he has the right to have his executive privilege and other confidentiality requests adjudicated in the courts. It's about all of those things, Harry. So I was glad to see Jay start with that. Of course, there's no better advocate on these issues than Jay. He's got a long track record of it. But when I listen to that sound, Harry, I think the president has the right man in the right place at the right time. And quite frankly, all of Americans, no matter where you are on the political spectrum, should be for defending the principles that Jay laid out in that soundbite.
I think you're precisely correct, Than. While Democrats fervently argue in favor of fairness, they ignore their own participation in hearings without due process, without elementary fairness, without respect for Article 2 of the United States Constitution, without respect for the fact that the United States Senate has the sole power to try an impeachment case. And so I think the Democrats have to confront a conundrum of their own making. They decided on an unfair process. They decided to rely largely on hearsay witnesses. They decided to bring a truly unconvincing case to the American people and to the United States Senate. And now they seek to enlist the United States Senate in basically rescuing their botched and shoddy investigation. And I think the Senate stood strong yesterday, and I applaud them for doing so, because it is clear beyond question that Article 1, Section 3, Clause 6 and 7 provides that the Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. And I think the United States Senate followed that process rather than cooperating with Chuck Schumer in his attempt to basically do Nancy Pelosi's bidding. It's clear beyond question that this entire impeachment process essentially is a fanciful impeachment grounded in the fertile imagination of Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler. It is created out of whole cloth. It basically is an impeachment without seriousness, underscored by the fact that Nancy Pelosi, at her signing ceremony for delivering the articles of impeachment to the United States Senate, handed out souvenir pens. As Mitch McConnell has said, nothing says seriousness like souvenir pens. They also had souvenir photos. The only thing that was missing was a souvenir dance by House Democrats. So now they want the United States Senate to rescue their own impeachment effort. And I think the United States Senate was right to reject that effort made on behalf of Nancy Pelosi by Chuck Schumer.
I agree with you, Harry, and I thought the first win for the Constitution, for the proper order of the Constitution, was the fact that you pointed out that Leader McConnell did resist Speaker Pelosi's efforts to dictate the rules of the Senate. The organizing resolution that passed yesterday, I'm holding it in my hands, he refrained from introducing it until Nancy Pelosi sent the articles to him for consideration, and then the Senate decided how it would proceed, and I think it's proceeding properly, very, very closely to how it proceeded in 1999. We're going to explain a little bit of how that's going to look, what the breakdown is going to look like going forward, but I want to get right to the calls. We weren't able to get your calls yesterday as we were setting up what this trial is going to look like. I want to make sure that your voice is a big part of today's broadcast. So we're going to start on line one. Judith is calling from California. Judith, thanks for calling in. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Fan. How are you? Fan, I'm just one person in the whole of the United States, but I'm not going to sit by and watch the Democrats lynch our president who has done nothing wrong. I did my own research on the abuse of power and obstruction of Congress articles that they brought through with this fake impeachment. I found no constitutional basis under Article 2 of the United States Constitution. There is no violation of law here, none. There is no impeachable offense, period. What the leaders of the Democrats have actually, in fact, done is subvert the Constitution they claim to want to protect. This lawless narrative can never happen again. This is beyond egregious. It is setting a very dangerous and very wrong precedent. I can't tell you. Not only
I agree with you, Judith, and I will tell you, you didn't find a precedent or a grounding for the arguments because they're just not there. And quite frankly, I'll go to Professor Hutchison on the constitutional point, and then I want to make a point on the political one that Judith made. But Professor Hutchison, this is why Jay and the rest of the president's defense team started with the constitutional argument, because it's not just about defending one person. It's about defending the constitutional order and the careful balance that our framers set up between the legislative powers in Article 1 and the executive powers in Article 2. And if you're going to undermine that delicate balance, you're going to have a serious constitutional problem on your hands.
I think that's precisely correct. So the Democrats have charged the President of the United States with A, abuse of power, and B, obstruction of Congress. Where is the evidence of a high crime or a misdemeanor as required by the United States Constitution? The articles of impeachment brought by the Democrats are bereft of evidence. No evidence exists other than the arguments that Adam Schiff has had really with his own self. Keep in mind that Adam Schiff is a part-time movie screenwriter, and it is clear beyond question that these charges were manufactured out of whole cloth. And I think it is clear beyond question that American people who are aware of these proceedings and who are reading these arguments are aware that the Democrats effectively have not brought an impeachment claim that is consistent with the guardrails of the United States Constitution, and the United States Senate should reject them.
Defending that constitutional balance is the most important thing at play here. But folks, it's actually a good thing that there's a political part of this process, because you get the final say. You get the final say on who represents you in Washington, D.C., who is returned to Washington, D.C., and who is brought back home by the voters. We're going to take more calls from you after this break. 1-800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, everyone. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. In the video that we played for our Facebook audience over the break, there was a little bit of levity in it. There was indicated that under the rules of this resolution for this impeachment trial, the senators who are in the chamber have their option of flat water, bubbly water, or by special request, they can get milk. So it's good to know that our senators have three choices as they undergo these proceedings. But folks, you have to laugh a little bit. But these are very serious proceedings, and I am grateful that the president has a legal defense team that he does, headed up by someone who I know very well, the host of this broadcast, Jay Sekulow, also joined, of course, by our executive, Jordan Sekulow, White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, and several others on the team. They did a great job yesterday. I wanted to go right back at the top of this segment to some sound from Jay, again, on the floor yesterday, talking about this matter of executive privilege and whether or not it was proper for the president to have that dispute adjudicated by the courts. This is at the center of one of the controversies of this trial. I wanted to hear the arguments that Jay made on the floor of the Senate yesterday. This is bite two.
Mr. Schiff did say the courts really don't have a role in this. Executive privilege, why would that matter? It matters because it's based in the Constitution of the United States. One manager said that it is you that are on trial, the Senate. He also said that, and others did, that you're not capable of abiding by your oath. And then we had the invocation of the ghost of the Mueller report. I know something about that report. It came up empty on the issue of collusion with Russia. There was no obstruction. In fact, the Mueller report, to the contrary of what these managers say today, came to the exact opposite conclusions of what they say. Let me quote from the House impeachment report at page 16. Although President Trump has in times invoked the notion of due process, an impeachment trial, an impeachment inquiry is not a criminal trial and should not be confused with it. Believe me, what has taken place in these proceedings is not to be confused with due process. Because due process demands, and the Constitution requires, that fundamental fairness and due process — we're hearing a lot about due process is designed to protect the person accused.
Folks, I want you to focus in on the last line that was given by Jay there. He said, we're hearing a lot of due process. Due process is designed to protect the person who was accused. Folks, the process in the House, I will tell you, no matter where you come down on the issue or whether or not you support the president or not, the process that was conducted in the United States House, led by Speaker Pelosi, Chairman Schiff, and Chairman Nadler, did anything but protect the person accused. As Jay outlined in that sound, I won't go through it again, but at multiple stages, his request, the president's request to have matters of confidentiality adjudicated, were not honored. The subject of having counsel present and allowing cross-examination, that did not happen. There was a back and forth on when the minority in the House was allowed into the room or allowed to participate in the process. So at every stage of the process, the president's right to due process was undermined. I'm glad, again, that Jay walked through that. I want to go back to the phones now at 1-800-684-3110, because I want you to be a big part of this broadcast today. I know you probably have a lot of questions after watching yesterday. Let's go to Michael calling on line 3 from California. Michael, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Than, and thank you for taking the call. As a contributor to ACLJ, I'm really, really grateful for all the work. And then, I'm not a lawyer. I'm going to probably use terms incorrectly, but following on the heels of what the last caller said, since these two proposed articles of impeachment do not appear to reach the high level of impeachable offenses, I think we've all seen that. My concern is this: if in fact they are not handled by summary dismissal, is that not a de facto admission that they do and legitimize them and set a dangerous precedent?
I appreciate the question, Michael, and I don't think so. Look, I think there would certainly be grounds for dismissal. I don't think that there was a valid process in place here. I think it is a dangerous precedent to impeach a president on the flimsy articles that we have in front of us. But look, I think a full exoneration, a full rendering of the verdict by the United States Senate would very much speak against that precedent. And I would go to Professor Hutchison on this. Look, the impeachment in the House, Professor, is much like an indictment. We've made this analogy before. You're not guilty when that indictment comes down. In fact, when the jury renders you not guilty, that is the lasting impression. That is the last message sent by that body. And if the Senate exonerates Harry, that would be the lasting precedent from these proceedings.
I think that's precisely correct. And so I think the caller raises a very interesting legal question. So technically, I think the caller is precisely correct. Based on the facts so far adduced, there is a clear and unmistakable argument for summary dismissal. But I think a more powerful verdict would be to hear the House out, to demonstrate clearly and unmistakably to the American people that the evidence brought forward by the House in its rigged proceedings is essentially a sham. It's insufficient to pass constitutional muster. And to then acquit the president, to exonerate, to vindicate his exercise of his Article II powers within the meaning of the Constitution. I also think it would send a message to the House of Representatives. Keep in mind that members of the House of Representatives have promised to bring additional hearings and possibly additional impeachment proceedings again if the president is vindicated and exonerated. So I think if the Senate does its job properly and it looks carefully at the evidence and it finds that the evidence is wanting, as it clearly is, and then they acquit the president to basically reference back to what Nancy Pelosi said. She said the president is impeached for life. Well, guess what? If the president is acquitted, he is acquitted for life, at least with respect to these charges that have been brought by the Democrats without the Democrats conforming to elementary due process and elementary fairness. And I think at the end of the day, the verdict will then be in the hands of the American people come November.
I agree with you, Harry. The thing that has concerned me the most from the very beginning of this is that the sacredness of the American vote be preserved. Look, the American people overwhelmingly chose Donald Trump to be the president of the United States. Whether you supported the president or you didn't, the principle that you get to choose your president is sacred and must be defended. The threshold for removing an American president, folks, it has to be extraordinarily high. The framers set that bar, set that threshold at an extraordinarily high level. We clearly have not reached that threshold. And if we're going to start removing the people's selection based on a threshold that is this low, folks, our very way of government will be undermined. That would be a very dangerous precedent. Of course, exoneration in the United States Senate speaks forcefully against that, and it defends the vote of the American voters. Look, come next November, you are going to have a say. I think the Senate is going to exonerate. You're going to go back to the polls. You're going to pick your president. You're going to pick your federal officials. And folks, that is how it should be. You are supposed to have the final say. We'll be back after this break.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
I'm talking about freedom. Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
And now your host, Than Bennett.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. Than Bennett coming to you from Washington, D.C. We are live, and we have joining us now at the top of this half hour the executive director for the American Center for Law and Justice, a member of the president's legal team, Jordan Sekulow. Jordan, I know you only have a couple minutes getting ready for trial, but what's the latest from where you are?
Well, you know, this is the trial kicks off today. It will be 3 days of the Democrats. If they want to use, it will be 8 hours each day, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern time, right after the end of our broadcast, for most people who listen live. And then we will have the same amount of time. I don't know that we'll use all that time. We'll decide based off their argument. Based off last night, you would imagine that they're going to use as much time as possible until their material absolutely runs out. So I would imagine that they're going to go these 3 days, and then we will start to make our case on Saturday, Sunday's off, and then Monday and Tuesday. But what we do know is that we had a very strong start yesterday, and here's why. With all the arguments that were made, and remember, most of this was, you know, procedural, but they were having to put their whole case out through those motions. Not one of them passed. The Republicans held, and I can tell you that as they closed at night, and that was before, a lot of people, unless you're on the West Coast, didn't see what manager Nadler did. But by calling the Senate treacherous if they do not do what he wants, and by, you know, again, attacking them, he said they were on trial. So now he said that four times, twice on the House floor, now on the Senate floor, and in a press conference, and then called it treacherous if you don't vote their way on amendments, Than. And I was looking around the room because we're facing all those senators. They did not like that. And that is not how you talk to the U.S. Senate. It's not how you talk to any jurors in any case. But again, people need to be prepared for 3 days of them going on the attack, basically uninterrupted. But remember, we're going to have the same amount of time as well. And we get the opportunity to know exactly what they say and hit back on every single point. So just again, we are literally 20 minutes. We're in a holding room, you know, about to be on the Senate floor. People saw it. I tweeted a photo out actually recently this morning so that people could see kind of how we were seated, and it has our names. So you can see where my dad is, where I am, where the Chief Justice is, where Leader McConnell is, where the Democrat House managers are. So people should check out my Twitter account for that. And I'm about to post a photo of me and my dad in the holding room before we head on the Senate floor.
And Jordan, I would just tell you quickly, I know you got to go, but I would just pass along from our listeners we're hearing from, just very heartened to see both of you on the floor of the Senate handling this. So I know you've got to go, but thank you so much for taking some time to join us and go get them.
My dad has a quick message for everybody. Hey, everybody, we're about to go out, and just want to tell our audience we appreciate your prayers, we appreciate your thoughts, and we're about 25 minutes live, about 25 minutes from going out, so we appreciate it, and we'll be talking to you soon. All right, Than.
All right, thanks, Jay. Wow, folks. Nowhere else, I think it's safe to say, nowhere else in the country, nowhere else in the world are you going to get what you just heard. Two members of the president's legal team. What are we now? Let's see, 25 minutes before day two of the trial, or as Jordan said, day one of the substantive portion of the trial begins. You heard from both of them live on Jay Sekulow Live. I think it's safe to say you will not get that anywhere else. And yes, I guess I would close this segment with what I passed along to Jordan and what we're hearing from so many of you. As I watched these proceedings, there was a lot to be concerned about. There was a lot of due process concerns. There was a lot of structure of government concerns. There was a lot of constitutional order concerns. But I'll tell you what heartened me. It heartened me to see people who I know and who I trust and who I know have defended these principles over the course of their lives, sitting there at that dais, defending those principles, defending the attack on the presidency, defending the attack on President Trump. I'm grateful to both of them for joining their own broadcast today, but joining it from just off the floor of the United States Senate for a few seconds to give us those updates. When we come back from the break, we're going to go back to your phone calls. We're also going to explain what the procedure and the schedule looks like moving forward. You heard it a little bit from Jordan. We'll break it down in a little bit greater detail. If you want to be a part of the broadcast, 1-800-684-3110. Grateful to both Jay and Jordan for joining us live in this segment. We'll be back after this.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. If you were with us just before that break, something that I was hoping would happen, but I honestly didn't expect it to that extent because we are about ready to begin day two or day one of the substantive portion of the impeachment trial. But we were joined by our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, and our executive director, Jordan Sekulow, from just off the floor of the United States Senate to give us the very latest from on the ground about their preparations, about what they expect ahead. They were only able to join us for a couple of minutes, but it was great to have them with us. Continue to keep your thoughts and prayers with them as they prepare to make forceful and thoughtful advocacy on behalf of these principles. Again, thank you to them for joining us. We're going to go back to your phone calls, get as many of you in the broadcast as we can. We're going to start this segment off with Jason, who's calling from Michigan on line four. Jason, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, appreciate it, fan.
Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110.
All right, I'm going to jump in, Jason. There's really no need to go to name calling here. This evokes powerful emotions, and I certainly understand it. There are principles that have to be defended here, but look, we're on the side of merits on this one. So let's argue on principle. Let's argue on merits. Let me do this. Let me go to some sound from Jay on the floor of the Senate yesterday, because I think this speaks to the principle that we should be defending. I also want to explain to you what to expect going forward. But let's go to Bite 11 from Jay on the floor of the United States Senate. I think you'll hear more of this from him today. But again, I was glad this is the tone that he started it off with yesterday. Let's go to the bite.
The amendment which we oppose, as Mr. Philbin just said, is, in essence, an unconstitutional attempt to cure a defect in their own proceeding. To be clear, we are reserving our objections as it relates to hearsay, which is what the record primarily consists of. I also want to respond very briefly to what Manager Schiff said regarding the proceedings in the House of Representatives and the lack of agency counsel. He said it's much like a grand jury. He best be glad, and the members of his committee best be glad, that it's not like a grand jury. Because if it was a grand jury and information was leaked, which it was consistently throughout this process, they could be subject to felony. So I want to be clear. Utilizing this amendment to cure a constitutional defect, and that's what this is exactly what we've been arguing about now for almost 11 hours. It's changing the rules. It's different rules. I can't determine if we are dealing with a trial, a
pretrial motion, but we've now spent 11 hours arguing about something that we'll be arguing again next week. But the idea that you can cure in three paragraphs constitutional defects doesn't pass constitutional muster. We yield the rest of our time.
The idea that you can cure in three paragraphs constitutional defects doesn't pass constitutional muster. Professor Hutchison, no matter what the United States Senate does here, they cannot get over the hurdle that the way they have arrived here was not the way the framers intended impeachment proceedings to be embarked upon.
I think that's precisely correct. So the House of Representatives, A, refused to go to court to enforce committee subpoenas. That's number one. Number two, based on my understanding of the enforceability of House subpoenas must be voted on by the entire House of Representatives. That was not done. Third, I think it is clear beyond question that the House of Representatives, in addition to not trying to enforce their subpoenas in court, actually withdrew subpoenas. And so we've heard a lot about Ambassador Bolton. Well, one of Ambassador Bolton's subordinates actually went to court and he asked the judge, what should he do? And guess what? The House of Representatives basically withdrew its subpoena. So I think it is questionable whether the House of Representatives actually wanted witnesses to testify that they now claim they want the Senate to call. This is exactly backwards. And essentially, it underscores the fact that House Democrats do not have a case that complies with the United States Constitution. Where are the crimes? Where is extortion? Where is quid pro quo? Where is bribery? These were all things that were alluded to in House proceedings. And they are all now missing in action with respect to the articles of impeachment that were actually filed by House Democrats. So essentially, the House Democrats are basically saying to the American people, and you don't have to be a lawyer to understand this, they are essentially saying, we do not have a case. We do not have a case. The only thing that we bring to the United States Senate is our hatred and our dislike for two things, President Trump and President Trump voters. So essentially, that is basically been exposed in the hearing so far.
You know, Harry, I had the same thought when I was watching Chairman Schiff make the argument about the Senate being compelled to call witnesses, because every witness that he thought to bring up was either someone that he had not called or that he was not willing for the dispute over whether or not there was confidential information involved to be adjudicated. So it was almost as if he was admitting, Harry, that he had not done his job in the House and he wanted the Republican Senate to finish his job for him. In my view, it did not connect with the United States Senate because it was not grounded in reason. It was too duplicitous. But let's go back to the phones. A lot of you calling in. I want to make sure I get all of you on the air. Let's go to Andrea calling from Washington on line six. Andrea, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you so much. I just wanted to ask some questions. This all makes sense to me. I've watched all these hearings. I watched the whole thing until, what was it, almost 2 o'clock your time last night. And I'm just, you know, calling from just a regular person's standpoint. I'm not an attorney. But I think that the Democrats need to explain in public, in detail, why their intent to impeach the president was, you know, the first thing after he was elected. Because this definitely shows intent that no matter what he did, that they were going to impeach him. Now they're just trying to find answers. I think they should be cross-examined in detail.
Yeah, it was clear, Andrea, from It was clear, Andrea, from day one that they were intent on impeaching the president. It did not matter what he did or what he did not do. They were going to bring these articles. They were going to try to make the facts fit them, whether or not they had them or not. And quite frankly, I think it's pretty telling that nothing from the Mueller report is in any of these two articles, because that was supposed to be the basis for this. So it's pretty ironic that the thing we spent months and months on and tens of millions of dollars on, and that it bore out to the extent that there was a special counsel and there this grand report produced, and yet that investigation, the one that was carried out to the end, did not form the basis of the articles of impeachment. They went with the one that they had to rush out the door, and they could not wait on the additional witnesses to finish being brought in. It's pretty telling. But look, I think you're right, Andrea. The fix was in from day one. The left in Washington, D.C. was intent on bringing articles of impeachment. They just had to find facts that they thought they could fit into that narrative. Let's go back and take one more call in this segment of the broadcast. Let's go to Judy from Wisconsin on line two. Judy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have two quick statements and one quick question. The two quick statements is, God bless you all, and I hope you're safe and keep healthy through all this proceedings and everything else. The second statement I have is to talk to my evangelical Christian friends to get off of their bottoms and get out and vote. Now, the question I have is the Democrat senators that are running for office, will they have any say in what's going on? Will they be able to speak, or are they only going to be able to vote?
Yeah, thank you for your questions. Thank you for your comments, Judy. We are well. We're doing well. We're encouraged to be here. We're grateful to have a role in this. But we do thank you for your prayers and your support. To your other question, yes, the senators running for president will have a vote in the final say on this. All 100 senators will get to vote on both of these articles. There was some idea from Senator Blackburn that the senators running for president should be conflicted out. That did not carry the day. So each of the 100 senators are participating in the trial. They will ultimately have a vote. And 2/3 of them, so 67, would have to vote to convict the president of these articles. I do not believe that will happen. In fact, I think it will be a bipartisan vote against them. So I hope that answers your question. And to the question about politics, Jordan has written extensively about it. The book's called The Next Red Wave. You will hear, if you get that book, you will read his thoughts on how to elect officials who will preserve our constitutional order, how to organize, how to get the vote out, how to be active in your community, both at the polls and then in between elections. Because look, folks, elections aren't worth a whole lot if you do not enact policies that stand firmly on the Constitution in between elections. So to answer that question, Judy, I might have you check out Jordan's book, The Next Red Wave. After this break, folks, we will get the rest of your calls at 1-800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the broadcast. We're going to get right to your phone call. So Mike, Dominique, Ruth, and Dave, hold on. I'm coming right to you in just a moment. But I do want to quickly explain to you what to expect as we move forward. I've been promising this, haven't gotten to it. Next up, folks, there were no pretrial motions filed. So that would have been next in order. But it looks like there are no motions filed. We will move right into the beginning of the presentation of the manager's case. They have up to 3 days to complete their case for a total of 24 hours of presentations. I do suspect they will use all of them. Jordan, when he joined us earlier in the broadcast, suspected that they would as well. That would be today, Thursday, and Friday, after which point the president's team is up. They can also use up to 3 days or 24 hours to present their case. I don't know if they will use all three. Jordan indicated that they may not. I don't think we know the answer to that, but that would be Saturday, Monday, and Tuesday. Maybe they don't use Tuesday. We'll see. I don't know. After that, 16 hours of senator questions presented to the Chief Justice and then read to the two sides through the Chief Justice. 16 hours of that. So that would take a couple of days. That probably gets us through next Wednesday or Thursday. Then you have the motion to call witnesses, to subpoena witnesses and documents. That is the first motion that would be up. Once that is dispensed with, other motions are in order. And folks, at that point, the trial could really go two ways. If witnesses are approved, you might have to take a break to depose them, to get the documents and go from there. If it is not approved, we could move very quickly to a final vote. There could also be a motion to dismiss in there somewhere. But that's the basic framework of what we're looking at today. You're going to be hearing just from the House managers presenting their case. There won't be a rebuttal today. It'll just be the House managers led by Chairman Schiff. So that's what we're looking at. Let's go to the phones. Let's start with Mike calling from Maine on line one. Mike, your senator has been front and center. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Yeah, fan, thanks so much for taking my call. You're doing a great job holding the fort there. And I was so proud yesterday. I was watching this on C-SPAN's YouTube feed and, listening to Shifty Shift there. And then when Jay got up there to speak, it was like such an amazing moment. I've been following you guys for a long time, gotten many of the books. I've talked to you guys on air. And to see this moment, to see Jay and Jordan up there front and center in the middle of all this, it's a great moment. And I am definitely praying for them. And kudos to you guys for all the work that you do.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate that very much. Look, he probably wouldn't say it if he were on the broadcast, but I'm going to because I'm sitting in this chair. I felt the same way. I've been discouraged by much of these proceedings because I haven't seen the United States Congress doing the work that I want them doing. I've seen them distracted by this charade. But when Jay got up to speak, I knew that constitutional order was going to be defended. It's frankly why I've been privileged to be a part of his team for a long time. So, Mike, I echo your thoughts 100%. I was so grateful that they were there. I'm grateful they are there today, and I'm grateful that they both were able to join us for a few minutes earlier in the broadcast. Let's go back to the phones. Line three, Dominique is calling from Texas. Dominique, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I just want to say God bless you all out there in Washington, and thank you for doing what you do. My question here has to do with due process and how the Democrats are able to even proceed with this after they have vehemently and obviously violated the president's right to due process. Is there not a constitutional safeguard to this? Isn't there any body or anything that can intervene here and stop the Democrats? Because they're not going to stop even after this.
Yeah, better than that, Dominique. You don't have to go to a constitutional body. You actually are the recourse for it. And I think the framers set it up properly. I'll go to Professor Hutchison on this. But Professor Hutchison, we were very clear when the House was proceeding on this. We did not think there were proper grounding for this, but we said repeatedly on this broadcast that Article 1, Section 2, Clause 5 allows the House to have the sole power of impeachment. And if they want to proceed at their own political peril on an undertaking like this, they had the authority to do it. Of course, the United States Senate has the sole power to try. But back to Dominique's point, Professor, the recourse rests with the voters. To me, that is much more reassuring than having to depend on some other body to adjudicate it.
I think that's precisely correct. I think it's important to note that since 2016, Democrats and members of the deep state bureaucracy, including insiders from James Comey's FBI, have said they had an insurance policy against then-candidate Donald Trump. Then we proceeded to his inauguration, but within hours, the Washington Post had an article about starting impeachment proceedings against Donald Trump. This was well before Ukraine. Then we had the Mueller inquiries, the special counsel. That effort failed. So essentially what we've seen is a sequence of efforts to take down President Trump and basically to disrespect Trump voters. So today, House Democrats are back, and I think Jay said it very, very well yesterday, with what might be called a reinsurance policy. And it looks like this reinsurance policy will indeed fail, but still House Democrats are now talking about launching another inquiry. Effectively, what the House Democrats are saying is that in addition to believing in reinsurance, they must believe in reincarnation. In other words, they keep bringing back the same or similar charges. But the ultimate recourse to all of these repeated efforts by House Democrats is for the American people to stand up, to vote these individuals out of office, to hold them accountable, to remove the possibility of further harassment by House Democrats. That is the recourse. And so the power is in the hands of the American people.
I've got 2 minutes. I'm going to try to get the final two calls in. Let's go to Ruth from Pennsylvania on line four. Ruth, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Dan. I'm just curious. I watched it yesterday, and the Democrats brought up a lot of things that were never discussed during the impeachment trial. Can they now, for the next 3 days, discuss things that were never brought up, or do they have to stay within the parameters of the two impeachment articles?
Yeah, they're sure going to try, and I would suspect that you will hear a lot of comments that do not stay within those parameters. Here's what I would tell you, though, Ruth. I don't know how that's going to play. Actually, I don't think it's going to play very well with the United States senators. I know Senator Rubio and others have chided the House managers for going outside of the work conducted by the House. So they may try to venture, Ruth, but I'm not sure it's going to make their case. I don't think it's going to play very well with the people who they ultimately need their vote from. Let's quickly go to Dave calling from Florida on line five. Dave, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Thank you, Fan. I just want to say I was watching it yesterday, and the House keeps bringing up these videos of witnesses that they held in there. Isn't that bringing in a witness to this trial that you can't cross-examine them?
Well, that is a little bit different. I concede your point on the cross-examination, because there were, in some of the cases of those witnesses, not an ability to properly cross-examine. But the question of witnesses that we'll get to are really related to witnesses that the House did not call or they did not wait on. Dave, they don't want to call those witnesses again. They want to call new witnesses that Chairman Schiff and Chairman Nadler and Speaker Pelosi either were not willing to call or were not willing to wait for the thorough adjudication process to finish to call. So that's really the expansion of witnesses that they are looking for. Folks, as you watch the proceedings today, you'll see a lot more of Jay. Grateful for him, to him and Jordan, for joining us on the broadcast earlier today. But you'll hear mainly today from the House managers as they begin to make their case, and for the next 3 days. Let's pay attention. Tomorrow we'll break down what happens today, but we're just minutes away. We're grateful to you joining us today. Hope you'll join us tomorrow. Check out the other work of the ACLJ at aclj.org.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.